On today's episode of Hoops 360, we'll do a little temperature check across the league. Is Caitlin Clark and the Fever going to gain momentum? What did we make of her back and forth with Stephanie White? Plus, can the Lynx stay this red hot? And how are the Liberty piecing things together even in the face of injury? Plus, everything that you need to know as the Commissioner's Cup gets underway. Stay right here. Welcome into today's edition of Hoops 360. Cassandra Negley is crushing it in OKC, covering all things Women's College World Series. So check out all of her wonderful coverage on sports.yahoo.com. So in her place today, joining me is very trusted and wonderful voice of women's basketball for ESPN, Kareem Copeland. Kareem, thanks for being here today.
I didn't realize I was holding down the place of the legend. I feel it now, you know? Like, that's my homie. So thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's an honor.
It's big shoes to fill. I have a lot of trust in you that you'll be able to do it. But Cass sets an incredibly high bar.
Yes, but
Cass has been crushing it in Oklahoma City, and we're so happy to have Kareem here with us because it's been a week in the WNBA. We'll do a little bit of a league-wide temperature check. Some teams that are on a heater, some teams that are cooling off big time, some teams that are just kind of in the middle. Plus, we had the Commissioner's Cup tip off on June 1st. What does that mean? What will the month of June look like in the W? We'll get into all of that. But without further ado, we'll get into heat check and start with the team that everybody's been talking about, not just over the last couple of days, but it feels like over the last couple of years. And the subject of that team just continues to be the subject of so much conversation surrounding the W. And of course, that is Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. The Fever right now, at the time that we're recording this podcast, it's Wednesday, June 3rd. The Fever are sitting at 4-4, right at 500. You know, they're going into a really important matchup and a highly covered matchup against Atlanta on Thursday. But what has been the topic of conversation? Caitlin Clark and Stephanie White. Kareem, we saw the video that went viral. It's been all over social media. It's been all over sports talk shows. You know, the Fever were getting absolutely worked by Portland. Defensively, they were Swiss cheese. Caitlin Clark had only 6 points in that matchup. Stephanie White and Caitlin Clark were seen kind of yelling at each other. Stephanie White told Caitlin Clark to get up. Raven Johnson came in for Caitlin Clark's place. What was your impression or takeaways from that interaction?
That if I was getting run out the gym by Portland, I'd be mad too. I know it became such a big point of conversation, but I've seen that situation happen across sports and in so many places that that it didn't really kind of shake me at all, to be honest. Shoot, I want my coach and my best player to be ticked off when we're not playing well. And so I never took that as, oh my gosh, there's beef in between the two. They've got a good relationship. Both of them spoke on Monday to allay any concerns about that. Said, listen, like, I mean, Caitlin was saying, listen, last year when I got hurt, I was crying in her arms. She was like, I'm always going to ride for her. And so I do think the two have a good relationship. I think right now it's just a lot of pressure on everybody in Indiana because they're not playing particularly well. They're the highest scoring team in the league and you're still 4-4. That's because they're struggling to get stops. They're starting to target a little Caitlin on defense a little bit. They're putting her in a lot of isolations and making her guard, and so there's an adjustment both for her and both and the team to try to figure out different ways to defend and, quite frankly, to help her out. Listen, Caitlin Clark is a very she's an outstanding offensive player, and a decent defender, but she's not known for her defense, and so that's something. She's in her third year, missed almost all of last year, so she'll get better in these situations. But at the moment, moment, she's being targeted by teams. And that's what good teams do, is figure out ways to adjust. And quite frankly, it's not just her that's struggling on defense. The entire team is struggling on defense. They may be picking on her a lot, and because she's Caitlin Clark, she's out front a little bit more. But nobody on that team is just, you know, straight locking people down. Or they certainly aren't as an entire unit. So, I'm glad if it was my team, I would be happy that somebody is ticked off and are having words, and because if they're just sitting there honky dory like everything's good, that's not what I would want to see. So I think it's a couple competitive people that were fired up in the moment, and I think there's some frustrations that they're trying to figure out right now.
I am with you 1,000%. Because if you look at the Fever, they're 10th right now in the WNBA in defensive rating. For a team that has a serious and legitimate championship ceiling, that's unacceptable and that's not good enough. And it's the reason why the Fever have lost as many games on their schedule as they have. Now, let's remind everybody, we are 8 games in. We are not even a quarter of the way through the WNBA season. Let's everybody take a deep breath and remember that there are teams that look one type of way at the end of May and beginning of June and look wildly different heading into the postseason. Look no further than the Aces last year. Mm-hmm. So the Fever have plenty of time to figure these things out. I still do believe the Fever have a championship upside, but they have a very real and obvious and glaring deficiency on their team, and that is their defense. And that clearly was Portland's game plan, was whoever Caitlin Clark is guarding, get to the rim. Like, we'll just keep piling it on her and keep piling it on her. And that is kind of a gray area in Caitlin Clark's game. Does that make her any less great? Of course not. Does that make her any less important to the Fever and what they want to do as a team and as an organization? Of course not. But that's a deficiency in her game. And that's Stephanie White's job as her head coach to call those things out. And if she's not being coachable, you have to be a coach and you have to hold her accountable. I don't care if you're Caitlin Clark. I don't care if you're Michael Jordan. And I don't care if you're just like a nobody that nobody's ever heard of before. No one person is bigger than the team. And if Stephanie White allows Caitlin Clark to be bigger than the Fever, to be bigger than the organization, then she's not doing her job. So I have no problem whatsoever with two fierce and fiery competitors that want to win getting after it if they disagree with what's the best path for victory. We see it all the time. Draymond Green's done it to Steve Kerr so many times before. We saw Travis Kelce do it to Andy Reid on the sidelines. Like, how many times have we seen this before in sports? Star player and coach getting into a heated exchange on the sideline. And once the game is over, once the clock gets zero, everybody's all on the same page and there's no hard feelings. I don't think that this situation or this scenario is any different.
I wouldn't think so. Not at all. Those are perfect examples. And listen, if you, what's the quickest way for any coach to lose the entire team? To show favoritism for some person. And so if you're not going to coach Caitlin just as hard and hold her just as accountable as other players on the team, people pick up on that. And that's when, you know, you've got that brings up all kinds of other issues that they don't exactly have right now. So listen, you got to coach her hard. And she's never been one to shy away from being coached hard. It's just it's funny. Sometimes these narratives kind of get rolling downhill, but this is sports. This is professional sports. And this is what happens when you've got the highest of high goals. You know, this team is built to win a championship. That's the goal. If they don't, the season, quite frankly, is a disappointment. Now, would you rather have a team, you know, be a sub 500 team with no expectations? And when you, you know, throw up defensive stinkers, nobody cares. And everybody is just waiting for the final buzzer to sound and go home and do whatever they do. That's if that's the type of team that you're into. You know, that's on you, but you know, this is what happens with fiery, competitive teams that hold themselves to a high standard. And when you're not reaching that standard, I would expect everybody to be unhappy with it.
And when Caitlin Clark is on your team, like, that's what you sign up for. it's not only the great things and, you know, the logo threes and all of the great press that you get, but that also comes with being under a magnifying glass all the time. The Fever knew what they were signing up for. Stephanie White knew what she was signing up for. And this entire Fever team understand that that is what comes with playing with Caitlin Clark. It's not only constant press, but also probably constant criticism. So how did this interaction kind of filter through the rest of the locker room? We had an opportunity to catch up with Lexi Hull, Caitlin Clark's Indiana Fever teammate earlier in the week. And this was her reaction to kind of how the team and the entire locker room reacted to that exchange from Caitlin Clark and Stephanie White.
Obviously, Caitlin is a phenomenon, and we all know that. Everybody had something to say over the weekend because of the huddle with Caitlin, Stephanie White. We've got Twitter just going out. Everybody's losing their mind. You were there. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just there's frustration. I think we noticed they were trying to pick on Caitlin a little bit on defensive end. She was getting called for some fouls that, you know, fouls aren't fun. She got in some foul trouble. Our team got into some foul trouble, and that's just all it was. I think that's part of the game. There's frustrations that rise, and decisions have to be made. And ultimately, like, this wasn't something that carried on. This is in the moment, something that happened, and not something that is talked about now in our locker room, talked about even later on in the game. That's just something that happened. And unfortunately, Caitlin's got a camera on her 24/7. And so you see every little thing, but this happens almost every day in women's basketball. So not something that we're worried about at all.
All right, there you go. That was Lexi Hull, Caitlin Clark's teammate there. So, Kareem, you hear it. She said, we flushed it. We're not worried about it. That's what Stephanie White said and her media availability. That's what Caitlin Clark said and her media availability. I think we can all just move on from it. But, you know, where does the Fever go from here now? It's not just that exchange, but they're sitting at 4-4. It's not where a team that has championship expectations wants to be sitting 8 games into the season.
So they actually had a team meeting on Monday where it's funny. Sophie Cunningham said it was like 90 minutes, 2 hours. And everybody else was like, slow down. It was not 2 hours. But the point being is everybody was involved. And so it was, you know, it was Cody. Everybody always wonders, you know, okay, is it a players only meeting type thing? No, everybody was involved, and everybody just wanted to air out where they are and how they need to move forward. And Stephanie White pointed out was like, listen, if we don't speak these things out loud, then everybody doesn't get on the same page. And a big part of this is the defense. That's what we've been talking about. And it's not just Caitlin. It's the entire team defense. Everybody needs to get on the same page. And so during that meeting, it's funny. They've kind of simplified their defense a little bit or simplified a couple things that they want to do because they felt like, hey, if we're not excelling at the entire playbook, let's narrow it and make sure we can be really good in these couple areas. Okay, but you do that, but then teams get tape on those couple things and say, hey, they're only doing X and Y, and then teams adjust. So it's a constant adjustment period for, hey, this is or isn't working, other teams adjust to that, and then you adjust to that on top of it. So they were able to sit down on Monday and everybody kind of exhale and get their feelings out and understand. And I think everybody's trying to figure out how to become a better leader. Everybody's trying to, you know, this roster is still fairly new together with some new pieces. When you're talking about Maisha and you're talking about Mo Billings, remember how banged up this team was last year. And so even as we talk about Caitlin, and Caitlin was around last year, but, you know, she didn't get like a full sophomore season like you would kind of expect. So she is still as incredibly talented as she is. She's still young in her basketball professional career. So it sounds like it was a good kind of sit down amongst everybody, maybe not quite 2 hours like Sophie predicted, but it sounded like everybody kind of got to speak their piece and give their perspective on what's going on. So now you can all kind of rally back around and start you know, cleaning up all this stuff. And it actually kind of works out a little bit to their favor where they had a couple days break here where they could address some of that stuff. Because so often in this WNBA season, the cadence of when the games are and when your travel is, that doesn't leave a whole lot of practice time. A lot of stuff has to be kind of addressed either in film or addressed maybe in a walkthrough or a shoot around on the day of, but there's not a whole lot of just pure practice days, and they've gotten that in these last few. So that's why tomorrow will be interesting to see them kick off Commissioner Cup play against the Atlanta Dream and see what a couple days of just being able to focus on practice and go back and identify things in film and identify things to each other, and then very specifically have the time and freedom to work on that and see how that comes to play tomorrow. But I don't know how many people have said the sky's not falling. And that's what I keep hearing. The sky's not falling, but we do have stuff to clean up. And like players and coaches say all the time, listen, you want to play your best ball going into September, not out here in May and early June. And so the Aces last year, what, they were 500? Late in the season and then ran off, I think, closed the season with 16 straight wins, something like that. Yeah. So it takes a bit to get everybody on the same page and everybody pulling in the same direction. And it seems like that's what's going on in Indiana right now. But I don't believe that it's any kind of friction causing the problem. I think it's an execution type thing.
The overreaction to so much early in the season. It is, I'm shocked. I am aghast at the overreactions, the false rumors that were circulating around social media. I'm overwhelmed already, Kareem. But it is fascinating to hear too that some of the fevers, I don't want to say issues because that's probably not a fair word, but I'll use it anyways. Like some of the fevers issues that have been plaguing them early in the season. It's not just an X's and O's and stylistic thing. It's not just, you know, kind of tailoring the defense to fit where they are right now, but it's also a chemistry thing. You do point out that, look, Caitlin was not on the floor for majority of last season. That run that they went on, remember, just one game away for the WNBA Finals last year. Caitlin wasn't on the floor. Sophie Cunningham wasn't on the floor. Dawana Bonner left in the middle of the season. Ari McDonald was dealing with an injury. So, yes, so they ran back so many pieces from that team last year. And yes, they supplemented in the offseason this season. But a lot of the pieces that they're bringing back from last year were on the bench, recovering from injury. So chemistry, team vibe, all of those things take time. Do you want to keep going with our heat check, though? This team is fascinating to me. And, you know, the New York Liberty, they went on a 3-game losing streak, and all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, this guy is falling. And then they go back-to-back wins against the Phoenix Mercury. Leona Fibich comes back from her playing in Spain. You get Benaja Lady Hamilton coming back. She missed the last 3 games with a personal issue. So you're starting to kind of see these pieces fit together. And Sabrina is still dealing with her foot injury. But you're seeing some of these pieces kind of start to fit together a little bit. They had a 23-0 run in that first game against Phoenix. But then you kind of peel back the layers a little bit. And you're like, yeah, but Phoenix is really bad right now. So what's your kind of temperature check with the Liberty and where they are?
I was curious to see how you're going to qualify qualifying Phoenix there.
Bad. Can we just call a spade a spade here? Like, they're bad.
they're struggling. We can say that without a doubt. I think it's a little bit of the same thing with New York in terms of, you know, they haven't been completely whole yet. You know, like you said, Sabrina, Satu at the beginning. You've got a new coach. You're working in new pieces. The three teams that four losses against Golden State, Dallas, and twice against Portland. Those are all teams that are doing really well right now. So it's not like some of those struggling teams that are down near the bottom of the standings. And so I think this is another example of sometimes it takes a little bit of this early part of the season to let the chemistry build, number one. You know, teams are across the league, teams are banged up. I was actually talking to Lynx coach Cheryl Reeve the other day about this, and she made a point of, remember, CBA negotiations shrunk the entire offseason. And then you had to jump right into free agency. And then you had to jump right into training camp. And there wasn't a whole lot of time. And so she said flat out, she just didn't think players were physically ready to be able to ramp up so quickly when they'd been off for so long. There was a gap between those who played unrivaled or people who didn't go overseas like they usually do. So it was, you really went from 0 to 100 in terms of playing basketball for a lot of these players within a short amount of time. And I think we're starting to see some of that show up on the injury reports across the league. And the Liberty have been one that have kind of had to deal with that and suffered through that. And so, and you've been playing under Sandy Brundello for these last so many years. And when somebody, listen, people, let's not discount changes in philosophies and scheme and just kind of adjusting to a new way of play when you've got a new coach. So, listen, this is a team that's just got way too much talent on that roster to continue to have some of these losses that we don't think they should have. And so I think it's kind of more of a patience thing. And again, be a little bit patience, chemistry, get healthy. I think those were probably the biggest things that when it comes to New York, I would point to.
And I'll even add to not just adjusting to life with a new coach, not just adjusting to life with Chris DeMarco, but it's also adjusting to life in the new WNBA. And I know the Liberty's not the only team that's adjusting to that, but Jonquel Jones has been very, you know, outward about saying how officiating has been something that they've all had to get used to, especially in such a veteran team like the New York Liberty that's accustomed to playing a certain style and a certain pace of play, then now everyone has just been kind of tasked with peeling back a little bit. So not just the Liberty, but every team in the league is dealing with that. But of course, that's something, yet another change that the Liberty have had to get used to as well. You bring up Cheryl Reeve. Minnesota Lynx. I mean, we're talking about a heat check. We're talking about a temperature check. No team in the NBA is hotter than the Minnesota Lynx, sitting at 7-2 right now at the top of the league. They have not lost a single game since May 17th. Olivia Miles is playing like an absolute vet in this league. Courtney Williams coming off of a 30-point game. Kareem, when we were coming into this season, Cass and I divided up our championship tiers, our kind of middle of the road tiers, and then our tier of teams that we thought just not quite there yet. We put Minnesota in the tier, like middle of the road. Nafisa Collier's a little bit banged up. This team lost a lot of pieces. We didn't view this team, at least going into the season, as a championship contender. It's early. We know that. But how in the world has Minnesota been able to do this even without Nafisa Collier?
This is a 7-2 team and they don't have Fee yet. Imagine what's going to happen when they add them back. Actually, I talked to Courtney Williams about this last week and she said, look, everybody's getting comfortable and confident right now in what they can do. And then we're going to add back Fee. She said, we're going to be a problem at that point. And that was, so I got to catch up with them a couple times in Chicago in these last couple weeks. And I was asking that exact same thing, is how have you been able to get out to such a fast start? How do you, speed up all this chemistry they lost? You know, their roster was decimated outside of what I think they had 4 players that went and signed $1 million contracts in other places. Definitely at least three. You know, you got Bridget Carlton, you got the two in Dallas, and Natisha Heidemann. And so, and I asked Kayla McBride about this, and she was like, torn. She was like, yeah, you miss your sisters, and yeah, you wanted the chance to run it back all together one more time. But she's like, listen, the fact that, you know, our entire starting lineup from last year are now millionaires, and they got rewarded in the way that they did, shows what we've accomplished over these last couple of years. The last 2 years, they've had more regular season wins than any other team in the league. And so the things that kind of that identified for me was, first off, they pointed at the foundation that has been set by Cheryl Reeve of the non-negotiables that they have within their system. And it's funny, they call it taking their vitamins. They're like, every day, these are the things that we work on, no matter rain, shine, the things that these are the foundations of how we play offense, of how we play defense. And if you can't be on board with that, you can't be on board with this team. It's the simple stuff that you just have to do over and over and over and over until you know it, like the back end. And when you can get everybody on that page and thinking in that mindset, that gives you a chance to kind of step forward. That puts you on that puts you ahead of the game. And that's something. And I was talking to Chicago's coach Tyler Marsh about the same thing, and he said it's amazing to see how Cheryl can take different rosters, different personnel, and still fit her scheme to that group or incorporate that team into that group. And so you've got Courtney Williams, you've got McBride, you've got Fee still there, and they are laying out this foundation of what it means to play in Minnesota, and everybody's got to get on board. And they've done a good job of bringing in people who kind of not only fit that mold of how to play like that, but can also kind of seamlessly slide in. Natasha Howard, for example, she spent 2 years in Minnesota before, so she knew what she was kind of getting into when she came here, and it was easier for her to acclimate quicker. Nia Coffey, you know, is always kind of a glue player who can do all the little things that you ask for. You slide her in and she fits so well. And then you add the best point guard coming out of college, who could have been the number one overall pick, who has hit the court running and has had, quite frankly, more success than probably she even thought. It's kind of a perfect scenario for things to kind of click and click fast. I laugh at Reeve. You know, she's, you know what, four championships, I think four Coach of the Year trophies. How many Hall of Famers has she coached over her career? And the way she speaks about Olivia Miles is just in a way that I haven't seen a lot from her. She's not the type of coach that just kind of, you know, glows over somebody and is just super above the board, just praising. But she said she's never had a player that's been as curious as Olivia Miles. She went out of her way to talk about the way Olivia can adjust to defenses and not get sped up and not let people dictate what she does. She talked about her having counters. So she has a counter for everything, and nobody, no matter what a defense presents, she can alter and say, okay, you're going to take away this. Okay, I'm going to take that. And she said she's never had a player with counters like that before, which is wild to me because we know some of the people that Cheryl Reeve has coached over her career. And so you've already got a team that's pretty darn talented, that lost a lot of big pieces, but were smart in the way that they supplemented and built out the rest of the roster. And then you give that team the number two overall pick and they nail it with a point guard who's, you know, going to be a top point guard in this league for a decade plus. it's kind of a pit and a coach that clearly knows what she's doing and an institutional foundation. And there's a level of confidence with this group. Talking to both Kayla and Courtney Williams, both, neither of them sounded like, I asked them both, you know, during free agency and you see all your people going different places, was there any concern, any worry? Did you guys have to have a conversation? They said, no, we didn't have to have a conversation. We knew what the standard was and that we're going to bring that standard to the people who are coming in, and especially with the people that they were familiar with. And then of course Courtney Williams, and only the way that she can say, she's like, I'm here. I knew as long as I'm here that we were going to be good. I was like, Court.
I can hear she her goes, saying
goes,
that.
She goes, I'm a confident person. I go, oh, you?
Oh, are you?
I've never noticed that about you. So
Couldn't tell.
It was great. Exactly. So I think it's been really all of those little factors working together. It all starts with the defense. They're the best defensive team in the league. They help and cover for each other and move on a string and are so connected that you're locking opponents down. And then on the other side, they're super efficient offensively. They're best when they're moving the ball side to side and everybody's getting touches, and they've got backside actions that are going on and everybody's always moving. And so it's really hard as a defense to kind of corral them into one thing because they've got so many options off of everything. I think all of that stuff comes into getting off to the type of start that they've been able to do so far.
Look, defense isn't a sexy thing to talk about. Like, we want to talk about points. We want to talk about half-court shots. We want to talk about offense. Mm-hmm. But defense is what is the core and the foundation of this league. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that the teams that have top five defenses in the WNBA are the top five teams in the W, whether it's Minnesota, whether it's Dallas, whether it's Vegas, whether it's Golden State. Like, defense is so easy to trust. Defense goes on the road. Defense is something that I think you can project into the future. Defense is something that is necessary once you get into the grind of the postseason. And if I know anything about a Cheryl Reeve coach team, I know they're going to be playing some defense.
They're going to get
stops. And then you pair that. They're going to get stops. They're going to create more opportunities. And then you pair that with Olivia Miles that is not playing like a rookie. These are just some players that we've seen in this league come out and start the rookie year, and they just get it. Like Sonia Citron last year, Paige Beckers last year, like they just knew how to play in this league. And Olivia Miles has been that. And then knowing that they haven't even reached their ceiling yet because they're fearless, like that is, I think, should strike fear in so many other teams in the WNBA. And I think another team that, you know, it has struck fear for some teams, but has been kind of hot and cold and has been kind of a fickle team, which is to be expected for an expansion team, and that's Portland. You know, Portland lost to Golden State on Tuesday night. It was a 20-point loss. It wasn't great. But also you understand that Portland is 6-4 overall. They've racked up a 15-point win over the Indiana Fever. They've beaten the New York Liberty twice. They had a 20-point win at Toronto. They're ahead of schedule, I think, based off of expectation and based off of the roster that they assembled at the beginning of the season. But also, Kareem, with all of the good and the gaudy wins comes the gaudy losses. The 20-point loss to Golden State, the 20-point loss to Atlanta, the 17-point loss on the road at Indiana. I don't quite know what to make of the Portland Fire other than it's really fun to watch them at times.
I think right now they're one of those, the sum is greater than the individual. The whole is greater than the individual type teams, where I don't know that you pluck one or two off of that roster and can just plug them in anywhere and they're going to be able to accomplish the same thing. I thought Megan Gustafson said a really good thing the other day, that you've got a bunch of players that have something to prove, but they found themselves in an organization that believes in them, that very much targeted them and brought them in and has allowed them to be themselves, allowed them to be their best selves. And there have been pieces that were all asked to play very specific supporting roles in their past. And now they're in a system and with a coach and with the backing of the organization that kind of allows them to loosen up a little bit and be and just do more and be more. And I think when you get a group of those players together who've all maybe had similar situations in the past where they felt overlooked and people didn't believe in them, but you're like, listen, I know I can play. I know I can be in this league. You know I can be an upper echelon player in this league. And you get them all together and you get them all to buy in. It's a little bit of similar to the stuff we were talking about, the Lynx, as far as, you know, playing as a group, you know, making defense, you know, your calling card and going from there. Megan was in tears the other day. She said, this is the first time that I've felt like the organization and the team has had my back in this way. And so as an expansion group, as this group of, you know, non-superstars, for lack of a better phrase, sure, you're going to have some inconsistencies and you're going to have some of those days with those losses that you just mentioned. But also the teams that you just mentioned they lost to are pretty darn good teams in their own right. So that's what I'm interested in watching them as the season goes on. And can they keep up this level? Well, this is what will happen when they start to see these teams multiple times and the scouting report is on them and opposing teams have a better idea of their scheme and what they're trying to do. So they're not seeing it live for the first time. You know, I'm always looking at what happens on that second go around when, okay, now we're not going to be surprised by player X or by this action that you run or the scheme of what you want to do. So I think they're in a spot where success can be sustained, but I think there's going to be ups and downs regardless, just because there's going to be nights where they're going to run into teams and some of the teams that we were talking about with championship expectations that are just going to, you know, out-talent them on days. That's just going to happen on sometimes. But I do believe that as a group, if they can stay working together as a core, that will win you games that you're not supposed to necessarily win. And I think I think about when you look at that team and we were all wondering what they would look like, and then just to compare to another expansion team in Toronto, you look at what they're doing and they're being led by Marina Mabry and Brittany Sykes, and we know how good they are and we've seen them over their careers. And those two are, you know, both scoring 30 points in single games. Portland doesn't seem to be built in that same way. And so it's almost like a little bit of you can see how they're managing their strengths in different ways than maybe a Toronto is managing their strengths. And so how will that play out over the long term? Like you said earlier, you know, we're not even a quarter of the way into the season, but it's optimistic when you know your group is bought in. It seems like you've got a scheme that fits the strengths of all of these new players that have been thrown together within, you know, we were just talking about that with other teams. They for real got thrown in together. None of them were on the team last year because the team didn't exist last year. And so it's a good way to start. And I think it's very telling about the mindset of the players that they brought in and that they've kind of been able to get on that same page so quickly and be able to like kind of tap into this group think and this group production, as opposed to kind of having to lean on somebody, or having, you know, Bridget Carlton's having a great year, but you don't have to lean on her, even though she was the number one pick in the expansion draft. So it's I don't think they could ask for anything better out in Portland, to be honest.
I mean, the team is fun and it's exciting, and they feel like, I feel like on any given night, Portland has a chance. And for a new team and an expansion team, interest and excitement and buy-in, I think, is really all you can ask for, you know, this early in a team's existence. And I think you pointed out one part that I've loved to watch about this team, and even going back to Golden State last year. Players that didn't really get a chance earlier in their careers, now getting to play a much larger role and what they do with it. Like we saw it with Veronica Burton last year. She played a max of, you know, average 15 minutes a game before she got to Golden State. Then all of a sudden she's playing 30 minutes a game, and she's scoring 15 points a game. She has, you know, career highs in almost every single statistic. And it's like, wow, look what happens when you just give someone a chance. So to watch that unfold in Portland, it gives me the warm fuzzies. Like, it's beautiful to see, and it's so cool to see Alex Sarama and kind of how he's been able to build a foundation, an early culture of this team. So I think it's easy to talk about the obstacles that a expansion team might have, or a team in its first year might have. You know, you're trying to drum up interest, marketing is difficult, you're building a foundation of your culture, you're building a team, you're trying to find a coaching staff that fits. Like, everything is new, and that's difficult. But we did get a chance to talk with Portland Fire head coach Alex Sarama just a couple of weeks ago about the advantages that actually exist of being an expansion team, and this is what he had to say.
I kind of going into this, I view it as a bit of an advantage, because to that point, it's we get to build the culture and get to build the identity from day one with this. And that's really what we've tried to do in terms of the culture of what it feels like to be here, whether you're a staff member, a player, what it looks like to practice and the identity we have around our practice and what we do in the practice environment, and then also how we play on offense and defense, and trying to leave a really firm imprint so that it's a recognizable style of play, and anyone can who's watches a game or turns on the TV can see that there's a vision for what we're trying to achieve offensively and defensively. And I think being part of an expansion team, it allows us to just start from the ground up and build it how we want it from day one. And that's really one of the goals here. We want this to be a positive experience. So at the end of the year, success for us is if every single player says, I want to be in Portland next year. This is a great environment for me, and I enjoyed showing up to work every single day.
And Kareem, I think kind of what we took away from there is this team is playing free without expectations. And to Alex Sarama's point, that is a really beautiful thing for an expansion team to be able to say, hey, we're playing with house money. We're going to go out there. We're going to do the best we can. We're going to start to build this system. We're going to start to build what works for us. If we go out there and beat the, you know, New York Liberty by 20 points, great. If we go out there and get smacked in the mouth by Golden State by 20 points, well, it's a learning opportunity for us.
It's the exact opposite of Indiana, where there are high expectations and everybody knows what those expectations are. And when there's struggles and you don't maybe and things aren't clicking right away, how, you know, it weighs on you. And I know they've got a good perspective of, hey, it's early, but you know, those are two different things. And I don't care who you are, it's easy to go out and just play and just have fun when you know you don't have to worry about you don't have to worry about the standings, you don't have to worry about you know, what's the fan base going to say, and what's the media going to say if you struggle a little bit, because you're zero expectations coming in. And so I think that is a group that has just been able to kind of grab that and roll with it. And again, you see them just having fun. They just look like they're having fun and enjoying themselves. And when that happens, you know, things click well. But again, I'm interested to see this once, you know, we're almost through the first quarter of the season, but that second quarter of the season when everything's not so new and teams force you to adjust, I was just talking about counters. What's their counter? What's their adjustments when the scouting book is a little bit thicker on them?
Everything's really fun and easy when you're winning. How do you respond when things get tough, when you face some adversity? It's going to be fascinating to watch, especially for these expansion teams in Portland and Toronto, but across the top of the league as well. Kareem Copeland, like we said it, Cass has awfully big shoes to fill, but I think that you did it gracefully and wonderfully. So thank you so much for being here and for filling in. We appreciate you. And we'd love to have you back soon on Hoops 360.
Anytime. Let me know. Thank you guys for having me. I definitely appreciate it. And say what's up to Cass for me.
Will do. Will do. Thanks, Kareem. Appreciate Kareem Copeland for being here with us. You can read all of his fabulous breakdowns on all things W on ESPN.com. But let's look ahead to some games that we are keeping an eye on this week. And it's not just any other games of the week this week. No, we had Commissioner's Cup action start off on June 1st. That was the official start of the 6th annual Commissioner's Cup. So if you're new to the W, welcome. Here's everything that you need to know about the Commissioner's Cup. So essentially, it's an in-season tournament. If you're an NBA fan, think of the NBA Cup. But the difference between the Commissioner's Cup and the NBA Cup is these games in the Commissioner's Cup, they matter. They count toward a team's regular season totals. The difference is that teams are split up into the Eastern and Western Conference. So over the next month, teams in the East are playing other teams in the East, teams in the West are playing other teams in the West. So travel, which is a really big topic of conversation in the W, some of these teams going coast to coast and crossing bunches of different time zones, that is not going to be a factor in the Commissioner's Cup, keeping things pretty local. So the team in the East and the West that have the best record at the end of the Commissioner's Cup will come together for the WNBA Commissioner's Cup Championship, and there is prize money on the line. $500,000 that'll be split between the winning teams, between the winning team and all of their players. That is what all of these players are playing for. And not just, you know, standings, of course, as well, but prize money is on the line. It's really fascinating to kind of see how the prize money is approached this year, maybe in previous years. In previous years, remember, players were not making as much money. We didn't have million-dollar players in the W. So $500,000 meant a lot to some of these players that were making less than $100,000. Now, in the new CBA, we have plenty of players making $1 million or at least close to it. So does the same kind of fire exist for players that are now making more money? Honestly, I still think it will, because $500,000 is still a lot of money, even if you're making close to $500,000, but at least something to keep an eye on there. So some of these upcoming games that we're going to watch in the WNBA Commissioner's Cup, we've got Tempo and Liberty, 7:30 Eastern time tip on Wednesday. That's the Sandy Brondello Bowl. Remember, Sandy Brondello won a championship with the New York Liberty just a couple of years ago. And after the New York Liberty got bounced from the postseason last year, they decided not to extend her contract. Sandy Brondello then took the job with the Toronto Tempo, so she will make her return to New York City on Wednesday night. And grab your popcorn for this one on Thursday, because all eyes will be on Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark. Stop me if you've heard that one before. Atlanta will head to Indiana on Thursday, 7 o'clock Eastern time. So not only is it going to be fascinating to watch Angel versus Caitlin in that one, remember the rivalry going back to LSU and Iowa in the national championship game, Angel Reese pointing to her ring finger. It'll also be the first time that we see the Fever in action since the Caitlin Clark and Stephanie White back and forth on the court and that loss to the Portland Fire. We heard Kareem highlight what went down in that players' meeting that happened earlier in the week. So how much, lack of a better word, fire are the Indiana Fever going to come out with in this game as they take on one of the best teams in the W in Atlanta? Let's look ahead to Monday, June 8th. We've got Fever and Mystics. The Mystics are a hot young team. We get Caitlin Clark versus Sonia Citron. And how does this young Mystics team take advantage, really, of Indiana's defense? Does Indiana's defense look much improved after they've had a shaky start to the season? I'll keep an eye on that one, as well as yet another revenge game in the WNBA. We've got the Atlanta Dream heading to the Chicago Sky. Angel Reese taking on the team that originally drafted her and then traded her this past offseason. I'm sure that one will have fireworks as well. Plenty of other games to keep an eye on. And we will have all of a breakdown of all of the action in the W, the things that stood out to us, the most important storylines. We'll be right back here breaking it all down on Hoops 360. You can watch us on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page and wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week.